The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
I'm just going to start talking. I think we're waiting for a few more professors. Hello. Hi. I'm Diane Orentlicker, and I teach various classes in public international law here. My understanding is that there will be several other professors joining us. But it would be helpful for me, I'm sorry, I actually have the UN General Assembly debate going on here, which is very distracting. But isn't technology amazing? There's a very unfortunate debate going on right now about whether international criminal tribunals promote justice. So just so I can get a sense of you, are most of you, you're when you're first-year students interested in international law, just so I... And can I ask how many of you are taking the first-year elective in international law right now? So about half of you. Okay.
We're taking the comparative.
Oh, okay. With, I call it by your first name all the time. I was struggling not to call it by your first name. Okay, great, great. And just while we're waiting for some of my colleagues to come, are there questions that are particularly on your mind, or are most of you just interested in getting some general guidance on strategies for selecting courses? Mm-hmm. A little bit of both, yeah?
I guess just the order of that you suggest.
Sequencing?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And yes?
Also, if any classes like cafeteria, I don't know if they really got
Okay. You know what? Why don't I? Any other questions just that you want to get out now, and I can sort of repeat them when the colleagues come?
Is this session going to be more on public international law?
Is this session? So that's a great question. Last year when we did this, when I was asked to do this, I said I can sort of talk about public international law, but you really should have someone else who can talk about non-public, and they had Professor Anderson. I said the same thing this year. And Professor Anderson is on leave, and I suggested they find someone else. I don't know whether they did. The other professor, whose name I remember, also emphasizes public international law, but I hope they do. I can sort of give you some general guidelines on this, but I'm not going to be the best person for giving you specific guidelines. And it will be helpful for me to know how many of you I know it's early in your career here, but how many of you think you're going to be focused more on business, I gather? Mm-hmm. And how many of you think you're going to be focusing on public international law? So pretty evenly divided. Let me sort of start with a few general points, just because I'm a big believer in not keeping people waiting, particularly when they show up on time for this. And I assume some of you have classes and you'll be needing to get to. I think for international law, some of the specific decisions you will make about course selection will be guided by what you think you want to do, particularly if you have a very clear idea of what you're going to do. But I'm actually a very firm believer that it's important to take a public international law class very early in your time here. So I think it's great that some of you are already taking it in your first year. For those of you who haven't taken it during your first year, I really would strongly recommend that you take it in the fall. And I say that as someone who did not take international law myself when I was in law school. And I was so embarrassed by that I didn't publicly acknowledge that until I got so old that I thought I've been practicing nothing but international law for 30 years. I can say this. I can come clean and admit I didn't take it myself. And the RAF, although I went to a law school that had some great international law professors, the RAF, when I was a student, was that you don't really need to take the general international law class. You have to pick up what you need about how international law functions in more specialized classes. And I that was commonly said. I'm curious how many of you have heard that. You've heard that. Yeah. So I think that view is still somewhat widespread. The reason I think it's unwise is that you learn a lot of basic principles of how the international legal system works in international law that you may not pick up by osmosis in subsequent classes. And so let me say something pertinent to the question about prerequisites. Some of our classes do have prerequisites, but we tend not to have as many as we might. And one of the reasons for that is that we want to make it more possible rather than less possible for students to take the classes they want to take while they're here. And obviously prerequisites serve to exclude a fair number of students. And it's a trade-off because you then get students, you get more students who are able to take a class that they really want to take, even if they haven't had a class that would have been helpful as a foundation. But I think there is a disparity. I've started asking students in my specialized international law classes to tell me whether they've already taken a previous international law class. I used to do that informally, sort of raising the hands at the beginning of class, so I could just have a general idea of how much background my students had. Now I do it for other reasons, because I'm trying to more scientifically assess how it impacts my students' ability to absorb concepts. And I have definitely come to the conclusion that if you don't take the basic international class either before or simultaneous with specialized classes, you will miss a fair amount of the nuance. And the part that is particularly important for purposes of being able to follow and get what's really going on in more specialized classes happens in the first few weeks of your international law class. So typically during the first few weeks of an in public international law introductory class, you learn about sources of international law and the basic methodology of international law. So you learn about the law of treaties and how customary international law is formed. You learn a bit about authoritative mechanisms for interpreting and enforcing the international law. And it's really that very, very kind of broad general stuff that helps you get more out of the upper level classes than you otherwise will. And the students I have in my classes who haven't taken international law make the same mistakes over and over again about the significance of having become a party to a treaty or not. And so for those of you who are taking international law now, you know what I'm talking about. It's really basic. It's not complicated, but if you don't get that foundation built, I think you really just won't get as much out of your subsequent classes, and I think it will affect performance later on. So that's my most important general message about sequencing. So it's really two points. One is I think you should take it and don't do what I did, which is skip it. Eventually after practicing for 30 years, you do pick up a lot, but I think it will be really helpful. And do it early on, because you'll get more out of your other classes that way, and you'll have a rich foundation for it. The other value of taking international law, I think some of you, or maybe at least one of you, were in Janie Chuang's class this morning?
Yes.
Yeah. So based on the class I just sat in on, you cover some fairly substantive topics. Maybe it's later in the semester. I don't know when you started looking at specific issues in international law, but today you looked at transitional justice. I gather in your next class you're going to be looking at international law and the environment. So you're getting an exposure to some substantive areas, and I think that exposure can be very valuable in directing you to upper level classes. I have a few other general thoughts, but I think it's probably more useful to answer specific questions you may have than for me to talk about particular issues. The other general point I was going to make is that I think for someone practicing in international law, whether you're emphasizing public or private international law, comparative international law, I think, is increasingly important. It's another basic class that I didn't take myself when I was in law school. But particularly when you're working in rapidly developing areas of international law, and there are more of those in international law, I think, than in most areas of domestic law, it's very helpful to have some familiarity with how different major legal systems approach international law. So, I mean, for example, a concrete example from a field I've done a lot of work in, international criminal justice. When the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia was created, and it was the first of the contemporary generation of international tribunals to be created, it had to construct its own procedures, kind of out of whole cloth. And it's an international tribunal with judges from every region of the world, and it constructed a hybrid form of criminal procedure, taking elements from different legal systems. It has predominantly favored common law approaches to procedure, but depending on who its president was during its early years, during some periods it favored common law. During other periods, when it had a French president, it swung more to civil law. Anybody working in that field could contribute a lot more if they had a foundation of familiarity with how different legal systems approach issues. And that has continued to be the case with all of the more recently created international tribunals. That's clearly the case in my field, but I believe it's the case in many other fields where as you develop new subspecializations within international law, you want the newly developed treaty dealing with a new problem or whatever the innovation is to make sense to a lot of different legal systems. You want new treaties and other principles of common international law to be readily enforceable within a vast range of legal systems. So having that foundation is also incredibly important. Rather than sort of talk about things that may or may not be helpful, it would be helpful for me to know what is on your mind and what kind of decisions you're making now. And if you don't have specific questions, I can keep telling you what I think are useful. Yeah.
When you say comparative law, you mean like taking a specific comparative law class or taking classes that are specific on other systems?
So I meant the former. I meant taking a course like the one Professor Nicola is teaching this semester. It can, of course, be very useful to take classes on other legal systems. And I would say especially if you already know that you are likely to practice in an area that involves either working in that country or advising a country or region of countries on U.S. law and doing, in effect, transnational law. Not a question, you just had your hand up. Other questions?
Mm-hmm. Do you know if there are some courses that are only offered in one semester?
Yes. Definitely, and and that's a really important thing to pay attention to. I get emails constantly from students who want to take a particular course of mine, and for their schedule, it would be better to take it in the spring, but I only teach it in the fall. So you absolutely want to take a look, and if you, at the curriculum with that in mind, with the course offerings with that question in mind. The registrar's office offers classes based on years of experience with student demand. And so the introductory international law class is offered, I think two different professors teach it each semester at least. So there you do have more flexibility. But a lot of the more specialized upper level classes are offered one semester.
So looking at the registrar's catalog right now, are we able to, I guess, predict what our next couple of years would be? Because there was one class I was in on computer, I was told it was offered in the fall, but it's not there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what is that?
The mass atrocities class with Osman. Mm-hmm. It's not there. So I don't know.
So that's a great question in general, what to make of the catalog. So one thing that might be useful for you to be aware of right now is that the the course offerings that have been put together and posted so far are a fairly good reflection of what will be offered in the fall, but there's been a bit of movement in recent weeks, and I know that that's happened with me. Of course, that I was going to offer in the fall has in the last week been moved to the spring. So I think you'll want to continue to update that, but I would recommend that you not be shy about asking a professor. I get those messages myself all the time, what their plans are, and it may be that they got a course release during a semester they would ordinarily teach a class because they have something else they have to do that semester, and so they're pushing it to the spring instead. Yeah. Other questions? So I'm going to make another general recommendation then, even though you haven't asked me. And that is, for those of you who are fairly confident that you're going to work in public international law, particularly, for example, in a field like human rights, where you might think that international trade and international business transactions isn't relevant, I would encourage you to take at least some international trade classes. That the more strictly transactional classes may be less relevant if you're absolutely sure that you're not going to be an international business lawyer. But increasingly, I think this has been true for a long time, but increasingly a lot of areas of international law require somewhat interdisciplinary skills. And I'm using interdisciplinary kind of loosely here. I mean, for example, that people practicing in human rights today are increasingly engaging with patterns of transnational trade and trade regulation to harness both to harness the leverage of international trade and to ensure that international trade doesn't take place in circumstances where it might contribute to abuses. So these are issues that would come up in a mass atrocity class. And the international human rights lawyers who are contributing the most to those discussions have a strong business background. So, for example, right now, not like literally right now, but I teach a class on international business and human rights. And I, last year, brought in someone to teach a co-requisite on that, who's a business lawyer, and her perspective is incredibly important. And it may not be obvious to those of you who think you're going to focus on public international law how helpful that would be, but I would strongly encourage you to take a hard look at curricular offerings, particularly that involve foreign investment-related issues, international financial institutions, and international trade. And I actually do think, for those of you who are sure you want to do international business, that some public international law would be helpful for other reasons. I think you're going to be in a better position to advise your clients about risks that they may not realize they face in investing in certain unstable countries if you've been exposed to those issues in public international law classes.
Just to go off that point, in terms of our credit hours that we have, so if we take away our required courses that we still have, as well as bar exam type courses, do you find that there's enough space? Should we tailor the remainder of those courses solely on international law courses if that's what we really want to do?
Oh, what a great question. Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And in fact, that relates to a point I was going to make. It's hard to know what you're going to do, because it's a very common experience in law school and after law school that you have a course that changes your thinking because you fall in love with a subject, or you get a job during the summer and you discover you really like working in an area you didn't like. And so it's, if you have planned too tightly around a particular type of career after you graduate, you may
look back and wish you had had diversified more in the kinds of courses you take. That may not be directly opposite to what you're saying, but I think it's relevant. So in international law, it's extremely useful to have a domestic foundation for the area you're going to practice. And so again, you know, my field, international criminal law, it would be incredibly useful to be a master of criminal procedure in general in order to contribute to some of the really vital debates that are going on today about international criminal procedure. And the lawyers who've made some of the most important contributions in addressing issues like what do you do when you have a dictator in the dock who uses his trial as a political platform? The lawyers who've made the best contributions to those are ones who understand how domestic courts in their own country have handled analogous challenges. And so being rooted in whatever the domestic law counterpart to the area you want to practice in is extremely, extremely, extremely useful. And because you don't necessarily know what you're going to do when you graduate, some diversification is helpful. And one of the questions that always is raised by sort of mapping out your curricular needs is how much room do you give yourself to concentrate in an area that you're quite sure is the area you want to work on? How much do you sort of cover other bases? I actually think the latter is important. I think, let me amend that by saying getting the balance right is important, because you will all take courses that don't necessarily electrify you. And as teachers, we all hope that when you take a course that you think you need for the bar, you'll discover it's fascinating after all. But that won't necessarily happen. You will take some classes that you feel you have to take. And it's really important that you nourish your souls while you're here as well. And so I think all of you should find classes that just keep your imagination alive, that develop skills, that help you become creative, great, persuasive writers, because those skills will be important in your practice as well. But I tend to think it's a mistake to take every class you can find on a very specific subsection of international law, and some of my students do that, and I understand exactly why they are doing that. How do employers look at that? So when I've been on the hiring end and I see that a student has taken a class with an expert on a subject very relevant to the work of my office, it scores points, it registers, it's not irrelevant. I don't say, oh, but that was just a law school class, they haven't practiced. I think, okay, great, the student then knows the legal map of this subject, that's helpful. But if I see they've taken three classes in it, it'll tell me that they're dedicated, but it won't, the expertise, the added value is marginal. And again, just because you really can't predict right now what you're going to do when you graduate, it's helpful at this point in your education to diversify so that you're prepared for.
I guess to extend that topic, so a lot of the international courses, I assume, will be very theoretical, overarching topics. And are there any skills-based classes that you would recommend us taking that would like enhance our skill sets? Like
in international law.
Right.
Yeah.
That would enhance.
Yeah. Yeah. So the most obvious one is the International Human Rights Clinic. We have probably, I'm not even going to say probably, we have the best international human rights clinic in the world, and it's, you know, it's renowned for how good it is. And so if you have an opportunity to do that, you should. A number of courses do problem-oriented work. So for those of you who are taking Jenny Chuang's class, you can say better than I can, but I know she uses a casebook that's problem-oriented. So it may be helpful for you to just find out what professors' approach to teaching is, because no matter what the class is, a professor can teach it in a way that builds skills, and you should just find out what a teacher's approach is. Tony Verona, for example, who doesn't do international law, but he does a lot of collaborating on problem solving through an online mechanism for the class, and so I think you can find skills building opportunities. Relevant to what I was saying earlier, if you were interested in, you know, international criminal law, I would suggest taking trial practice classes, even though they're domestic rather than international. You'll be building skills that will then translate to an international level. Yes?
What's one domestic law course that you think is very important for an international lawyer to have, kind of one of the doctrinal classes?
That's a really interesting question. So depending on what area you think you're going to go into, I think procedural classes, civil procedure and criminal procedure, are helpful. Again, you don't know what area you're going to go into. Constitutional law can, in surprising ways, become relevant to international law. I mentioned earlier issues of self-representation in international criminal court. One of the challenges that international tribunals have faced is determining where they can draw the line when they have a highly disruptive defendant representing themselves without violating the internationally protected right to represent yourself. And the most important guidance, this gets back to the point I made earlier about comparative law, the most important place they can look when international jurisprudence doesn't fully answer the question is domestic legal systems, and looking at domestic systems, a broad range of them that all have rigorous constitutional guarantees is where they'll look for that. So I think those kinds of doctrinal classes can be very helpful, constitutional law in particular. I'm going to keep thinking about that question. It's a good one. But the answer beyond that, I think, really depends on what field you think you're going to be in. So, for example, if you're going to practice international tax, taking tax classes is essential. Even if it's domestic tax, it's going to be really, really useful. I did a little bit of international tax when I was in private practice many years ago. And fortunately, it was my first job out of law school, so I still remembered my tax classes. But that was, in fact, I knew more tax than I knew international law at that time. So it was very helpful.
Some of the questions.
So, in terms of international private law, so would you consider like business business associations, secured transactions, and what other courses, domestic
law? Those are good. You know, I am a bit hesitant to say more because it's not my area, and as I said, I hoped that a colleague who teaches that would be here. I'm trying to remember what Ken Anderson said last year. I think he recommended the introductory course in international business transactions, and I would add to that international trade, which Hadideh Alai teaches. Increasingly, I think students both in public and private and international law find it useful to understand how international financial institutions work, because even if you don't think you're going to work for an IFI, the work of IFIs can become highly relevant to both public and private areas of international law. So I think that set of courses would be helpful. And I will try to give some more thought to that. I'm hoping that Ken Anderson's words will sort of percolate from my deep researches and consciousness in the next 2 seconds. Is there another question? I thought I set your hand up. No? Yes?
Do you recommend more course experience or more practical experience through externships, clinics, etc.?
So I think there are two pieces, at least, to the answer to that. I have always told my students to take externship and internship opportunities as much as possible. And so the second level is particularly in today's environment for hiring is essential. And it's important for a couple of reasons. The obvious one is that you get your foot in the door with an organization that may be hiring later, but you also have, besides that that organization stuff, you have something on your resume and you have the beginning of a network. So even if the organization you intern with isn't it doing any hiring, they can help you identify opportunities with other organizations. But the best thing that happens, and I have seen this happen with my students a number of times, is that you intern with an organization, and often they will take you because why not? It doesn't cost them anything. You're getting course credit. They're not paying you. They're getting free labor. But they find out you're indispensable, and you become a valued part of their team, and they create a job just for you. And that's the best of all possible worlds, because it's not, and I don't mean to make it sound like that always happens, but I have seen it happen, and I always feel really gratified when it does, not only because I'm happy that my students got a job, but because that was the strategy, you know, that I advised them to take, and indeed it sometimes pays off. And so not everybody's in a position to not make money, but particularly during the academic year when you get credit for it, if you take it through the externship program, and if you're not able to get a paying job as a first-year law student during the summer, it's such a valuable thing to do. It's a like win-win-win prospect. So do that as much as you can, as much as you can. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you can answer this, but do you have any advice for any student taking one of the joint programs?
You know, that's a perennial question, whether it adds value. And I don't know how to answer that, because I mentioned earlier that there's sort of a rap that you don't actually need to take the introductory international law. And I strongly disagree with that. There's also a similar kind of common conception that it doesn't demonstrably enhance your career prospects to take a joint degree. And I say that particularly in the area of political science, which is the joint degree that is most relevant to most of the students who take my courses. And I just think the jury's probably out. There's no definitive answer to that. I mean, there may be studies I haven't seen that have a definitive answer to that. I think you do get skills that you're not going to get just taking a law degree. And a lot of areas of law practice today are as much policy as law. And being able to deploy the skills of another discipline when you take on certain kinds of work is incredibly valuable. What I tell students who ask me my advice when I know them is, if I know them well enough to know they'll personally get a lot out of it, but they know there's no guarantee it's going to increase their job prospects, they should by all means do it. They'll derive value from it. It will give them intellectual skills they won't otherwise have that may enable them to solve certain problems. If you're going into government in particular, that kind of joint degree might be very useful. If you plan a career in the Foreign Service, it's going to be more valuable than in other fields. But there are a lot of different factors to consider. I don't think there's a clearly right answer one way or another. I think it becomes sort of personal to your own career path and interests. Other?
So basically the same question, but regarding joint degrees. Mm-hmm. So is it about the same thing, like it depends on?
So, you know, I think joint degrees, again, this is not my area, so I'm sorry that there isn't someone here who is an expert on business law, but I think joint degrees in business and law may be a better investment in terms of how many career opportunities that opens up, but is that not your question?
So I meant like the ones where you go to France or you get another degree.
So I think those are
wonderful opportunities for a couple of reasons. One is the field of international law really is international, and getting exposure to institutions and colleagues in other countries is both valuable as a type of experiential learning, which I think really does help develop skills, but also opens up opportunities. It's a way of networking in the field and getting a jump on global networking that I think is helpful. And to the extent job opportunities now, particularly in international law, are often overseas, it's a great opportunity. But I think it's also valuable for a reason I mentioned earlier. There are a lot of things you really should take in law school, and some of the joint programs provide students an opportunity to simultaneously meet some of their curricular needs, but do so in a way that's going to be just the most wonderful thing you did in law school. And if you can have it all, why not? There are reasons that are somewhat personal, but I think helpful. I personally think that if students learn things in a way that's enjoyable, it's going to, the knowledge will be retained longer. Just my own Pavlovian, whatever, view of teaching. Maybe that's not the right analogy. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. I've heard some jobs that are more internationally oriented and with NGOs and things like that. Like, some of them don't really necessarily require law degrees, but legal experience is highly regarded. Mm-hmm. When looking for job opportunities, how would you go about looking for jobs? And if a job comes up that you really like, that doesn't, you don't need to pass the bar, you don't need to get a law degree even. Like, how would we look at jobs like that?
It depends on what your goals are. I think some of the happiest lawyers are people who don't practice law. And my father was a law professor, and he passionately believed that people who went to law school develop analytic skills of problem solving that stand you well in any profession. So even if you don't practice law, you will have become a better professional for having gone to law school. And I think there's a lot to that. And I think there's a kind of rigorous way of approaching problems and negotiating with people and applying all those skills you learn in a law school like this in particular that will be useful in other fields. But in terms of being strategic about your career, so I do think it's important to be strategic, and this is why I strongly emphasize the value of taking advantage of externship and internship opportunities. The most important thing you can do to position yourself for the job you want later. But I also think that not everything is a strategic choice. And so I'm going to share with you some advice a law professor of mine gave me when I was about to, facing graduation from law school and had an opportunity that sounded really wonderful that I wasn't expecting, but it was in South Africa and I wasn't sure I wanted to go overseas at that point, and how will that affect my ability to get a job back here? And he said that he thought if at every point in your life you take the job that you most want to do at that point in your life and not think about how it's going to position you to get the next job, you will find that each job naturally leads you to the next thing you want to do after that. And that's obviously, it's not obviously that easy. If it were that easy, we'd all be just in heaven. But there's something to that. And so if there's a job that you love and it isn't strictly legal, but it's exactly what you want to do, I wouldn't tell you not to do it. You might hear a different opinion from other people, and you should obviously ask other professors that. But I wasn't joking when I said some of the happiest lawyers I know aren't lawyers, and I think they're better at whatever they're doing. One of my law school classmates became a caterer, and she's wildly happy and glad she went to law school. And some of my former classmates are journalists, and you probably see one of them on the evening news from time to time. And he's happy that he's not practicing law, but he often covers legal issues, and he's a much better legal correspondent because he had a law degree. And I think his career is successful, even though he's not practicing law. Any other questions? I would encourage you all to seek out other professors who weren't available at this particular slot of time. If you're interested in national security law, Steve Vladek is a great person to talk to. For trade, Hadide Alai. Jerry Levinson, I think, is about to leave us. I'm going to be really embarrassed if he's already left and I got that wrong, but I think he's still here, but just like for another few weeks. He would be a good person to talk to about international financial institutions. David Hunter on environmental law is terrific. Professor Nicola for comparative law is sensational. For clinical, Rick Wilson would be the best person to talk to about the Human Rights Clinic. So again, reach out to professors. We're all here to help guide you in these decisions, but some will be better able to guide you than me in particular pathways within international law. And feel free to get in touch with me too offline. I'm sorry, did you? Yeah. Every time I see a hand, I'm there. Okay. Nice to meet you all, and stay in touch, and good luck with your decision.
Hi, question or decision?